I play Jack Edwards, who's an English guy, who loses his work visa. And basically, through a chain of events, he marries his best friend for a green card. And then falls in love with a guy from Spain, and madness ensues.
You're leaving?
I'm not leaving. I promise.
Because you married Allie?
Because I married Allie.
Just because Mom married someone so they can get a green card. I get it.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A bill to recognize foreign same-gender marriages fails in Australia, Russia adds an adoptions ban to its growing anti-gay record, and U.S.-based binational couples on the brink vow to say I do. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Pamela Brooks.
And I'm Michael Allen.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 22, 2013. Australia's Senate defeated a bill this week that would have recognized the marriages of same-gender couples legally performed abroad. 44 nays outnumbered 28 yays. According to the Sydney Star Observer, the bill would have provided a legal loophole to lesbian and gay Australians seeking domestic recognition of their overseas marriages and for foreign same-gender partners visiting Australia. Several senators speaking in favor of the bill used the opportunity to chastise opposition leader Tony Abbott for his continued refusal to allow coalition MPs a conscience vote on marriage equality-related bills, virtually dooming any such efforts to failure. The newspaper said that the Senate vote was likely to be the last on any marriage equality-related proposal in the 43rd Parliament before federal elections in September. A bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples in the state of South Australia was introduced this week by Labor MP Susan Close, but is also expected to fail. Shadow Attorney General Stephen Wade of the opposition Liberals announced that all of his party's MPs would vote as a bloc against it.
Russia's Duma, its lower house of parliament, approved a bill this week to ban foreign same-gender couples who are not legally married from adopting Russian children. According to Agence France-Presse, the measure also heavily regulates adoptions by foreign gay and lesbian couples who are legally married. The bill follows passage earlier this month in the Duma of a measure to outlaw public support for LGBT people. The adoptions ban is said to be in reaction to the recent advent in France of civil marriage equality and adoption rights for same-gender couples. Duma Deputy Speaker Sergei Zhelezniak argued that if a child ends up with a homosexual couple, it could of course cause severe damage and the child ends up with a distorted perception of reality. The bill now heads to Parliament's upper house, where it's also expected to pass. President Vladimir Putin called for the adoptions ban in March.
Meanwhile, a statement issued by Coming Out St. Petersburg, the largest LGBT organization in Russia's second largest city, says it may be forced to close after being fined 500,000 rubles, more than $15,000, under the country's foreign agent law. The recent Kremlin regulation requires every non-governmental organization to declare receipt of funding from foreign parties. Those that fail to do so are branded enemies of the state. It was the second fine against a Russian LGBT group for violating that regulation in the past 2 weeks. The St. Petersburg LGBT film festival Bako Bak, or Side by Side, was fined what Pink News called a substantial amount last week for failing to declare foreign funding. Its organizers denied receiving any. And in the harshest punishment to date against an individual for violating a law banning so-called homosexual propaganda, activist Anna Anenkov was fined 20,000 rubles this week for holding up a rainbow flag with her girlfriend Elena Kostachenko at the unsanctioned May 25th Moscow Pride event with the slogan, Love is Stronger. Federal Court Judge Tatiana Navarona, who heard Anenkov's case, is expected to hand down a similar punishment to Kostachenko. A statement issued by Coming Out St. Petersburg warned that the level of the crackdown against gay and lesbian people in Russia is at a new high.
But kicking off this week's roundup of LGBT pride celebrations in the traditional month of June, Slovenia's President Borut Pahor marched with about 600 people in Ljubljana on June 15th. About 15,000 paraded with pride in Zagreb's annual procession in neighboring Croatia on the same day. Unlike previous years, there were no reports of anti-gay violence at either event.
Unfortunately, the same can't be said of Warsaw's annual march, also held on June 15th. The country's first openly gay member of parliament, Robert Biedron, was assaulted shortly after the otherwise peaceful parade of several thousand people wound its way through the Polish capital. He said he was relaxing with friends in a cafe after the march when an aggressive man began spewing homophobic insults. Biedron told Polsat News that he began to choke one of my friends and punched him in the face. When he recognized me, he spat in my face and kicked me in the stomach. The man was arrested soon thereafter. Despite the attack, Biedron said that the event had been a lot less problematic than previous years. No stones or bottles were thrown at equality marchers, in contrast to previous Pride marches.
The political turmoil in Turkey is threatening an LGBT Pride march scheduled for June 30th in Istanbul. Organizers issued a statement this week saying that, "We are sincerely concerned about the levels of police brutality and the use of crowd control technologies the public is being exposed to. For close to 3 weeks, as an LGBT bloc, in solidarity with several different groups and organizations, we have been resisting to defend our right to peaceful assembly, and we are concerned for our safety."
Organizers of Sofia Pride in Bulgaria canceled their parade, scheduled for June 22nd, citing security concerns expressed by municipal officials and the Interior Ministry. Extremists have violently attacked similar events in recent years, and there have been street clashes this week between right-wing nationalists and demonstrators attempting to peacefully protest the appointment of a controversial media mogul as the head of national security. Organizers said that other Sofia LGBT Pride events would go on as scheduled, including an art exhibit and film festival. But responding to the threat of violence at a parade, they said in a statement that, "It would be egotistic and irresponsible to all of us if we knew of such danger and ignored it."
Organizers of Shanghai's fifth annual Pride Festival had to overcome the usual government roadblocks this week, but called it bigger and better than ever. Three venues decided to back out of hosting Pride events after Chinese authorities questioned whether they had the capacity to handle large crowds. The festival, which ran June 14th through 22nd, included an art exhibit, panel discussions, a picnic, film nights, sports events, and an opening party attended by some 1,500 people. One of the organizers, Charlene Liu, told GayStar News that they were lining up around the block. "There's never been a Shanghai Pride parade, however, because Chinese authorities view street marches as illegal political protests."
In other news, Brazil's Congressional Human Rights Committee, chaired by right-wing evangelical pastor Marco Feliciano, approved a bill this week to overturn a 1999 ban by the Federal Psychology Council on treating homosexuality as a mental disorder. Feliciano waited until several committee members were absent to secure its passage. The regressive measure would allow psychologists to again consider sexual orientation as a disorder or pathology. Federal Psychology Council member Huberto Verona lamented its passage, saying that mental health professionals around the world recognize that sexual orientation is not a pathology that should be treated. It is not a perversion, nor a disorder, nor a behavioral disturbance. "Since this is the case," he concluded, "we cannot offer a cure, and that is an ethical principle." The initiative must still be debated in other committees before going to the full Chamber of Deputies and the Senate for votes. John Willis, Brazil's first openly gay lawmaker, expressed confidence that the measure would not make it through the legislative process.
One of the world's oldest and largest organizations to claim that homosexuality can be cured announced this week that it's going out of business. As out MSNBC News commentator Rachel Maddow put it, "Exodus International has not been changing gay people to straight people for the past 37 years, but now they will stop trying, and they say they are sorry." The organization claims more than 200 branches, churches, and counselors in the United States and Canada. It had insisted that people could overcome same-gender sexual attraction through prayer and therapy. Its work influenced similar groups in Europe, Africa, and Asia. But Exodus President Alan Chambers riled the ex-gay movement in the past year by admitting that so-called reparative therapy could hurt gay people, and that there is no cure for homosexuality. In announcing the group's closure this week, he wrote on their website that he was "sorry for the pain and hurt many of you have experienced." But Tony Moore, an Exodus board member, obtusely added that, "We're not negating the ways God used Exodus to positively affect thousands of people, but a new generation of Christians is looking for change, and they want to be heard."
And finally, there are several candidates to take up the slack in the gay cure industry as Exodus International exits the scene. Thanks to the well-known gay blog, Joe My God, we need look no further than the pseudo-Christian group signing on to a joint media release this week, vowing to defy any U.S. Supreme Court ruling that endorses civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples. They include such familiar names as Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, Matt Barber of the Liberty Council, Penny Nance of Concerned Women, James Dobson of Focus on the Family, Donald Wildman of the American Family Association, and Andrea Lafferty of the Traditional Values Coalition. They jointly declared that the Supreme Court has no authority to redefine marriage and thereby weaken both the family and society, and that redefining marriage is so fundamental to the natural order and the true common good that this is the line we must draw and one we cannot and will not cross. We're sure no pun intended.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 22nd, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Pamela Brooks.
And I'm Michael Allen.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
You don't question love. You let it be. You don't give the right to some, then take that right from me. And if it's family you want, then welcome to my home. Love is something my family owns.
Bi-national same-gender couples are among the most anxious people waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court's imminent decisions on marriage equality. Every day they face the possibility that their families will be torn apart because the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, prevents foreign-born partners from receiving the same immigration rights as their straight counterparts, even if they can legally marry in their states. If the court doesn't strike down the section of DOMA that bars federal recognition of their relationships, there's also an amendment to the controversial immigration reform bill now being debated in Congress that could grant them relief. Passage of that same-gender couple-friendly proposal is a long shot, however, since conservatives are threatening to use it as an excuse to scuttle the entire high-priority bill. At this pivotal moment, a new independent film dramatizes the precarious plight of U.S.-based binational same-gender couples. This Way Out's Vosh Bodhi brings us a conversation with the filmmakers, as well as a scene from I Do, featuring Jamie Lynn Sigler, David W. Ross, and Alicia Witt.
We are here with David W. Ross and Glenn Gaylord, who are the writer, director, and star of the film I Do. First of all, David, you're not only the star of the film, but you're also the writer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Why don't you tell everybody what the film is about?
I play Jack Edwards, who's an English guy, who loses his work visa. And basically, through a chain of events, he marries his best friend for a green card. And then falls in love with a guy from Spain, and madness ensues.
So basically, it's a story about illegal immigration.
It's definitely about immigration. I think what's really great is it's such a relevant subject right now. I mean, the film really shows how DOMA affects everybody, not just the couple, but everyone around the couple. So, you know, in a binational relationship, you don't have federal level rights, so you can't marry your partner and get a green card for them. So I wanted to show a film which was more about just people going through something rather than an issue movie.
Uncle Jack?
Yes, Tara?
Are you Nellie Mary now?
Why would you say a thing like that?
Because there's so matching rings on your wedding finger.
Ring finger. They just got similar styles, honey.
Well, she's going to find out at some point.
Find out what?
Me and Allie are married.
But you like boys.
Right. But we're not really married.
Sweetheart, you remember when I told you that Uncle Jack is originally from England?
You said he was from an island off the coast of Europe.
Yeah, England. Even though Uncle Jack has been in this country since before you were born, he still has to get special permission so that he can stay here.
Stay here?
Mm-hmm, in America. And they told him recently he couldn't stay here anymore.
You're leaving?
I'm not leaving. I promise.
Because you married Allie?
Because I married Allie.
Just because Mom married someone so they can get a green card. I get it.
I was really happy that instead of being preachy about your story and your perspective, you actually just told a story. From the very beginning, I was just all in it. It was a very beautifully shot and directed film, Glenn. So, you know, I'll get to you in a second. I just want to still talk to you about
it. I'm waiting very patiently.
So, Glenn, how did you get involved in the project?
Well, you know, when I heard about this project, it was years ago. Stephen Israel, who is our lovely and talented producer on the film, had told me about it. And we had worked together before. And I thought, I do. It's just like two grooms on top of a cake throwing like frosting at each other and just laughing and frivolity. And eventually I read the script and it was absolutely not that. It's this very intense, character-driven, heart-wrenching, very real and lived-in tale. And it has very short, almost elliptical scenes, and that really appealed to me as a filmmaker. I thought, wow, this is something I could really sink my teeth into. There's lots of room for just real breathing room and moments in this, and I felt the characters. And on a personal note, I was personally affected by it. A family member was separated from our family because of DOMA. She was in a binational same-sex relationship and had to move out of the country. And so I thought, this is perfect. I feel so strongly about the issue as well, and I love the characters, so I wanted to jump in.
Fantastic. Now, when you read the script, did you have any ideas about who you would cast as the leading man?
I was already cast.
Well, Stephen said, get us a David W. Ross lookalike.
Right.
So, you know.
And luckily he was available.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, it's funny because, you know, I've been writing it for so long, and I was in Quinceañera a few years ago, and I remember saying to Stephen, do you think that I could play a role in the film? Because I really wasn't interested in wearing so many hats. I'm glad I did, because it was an incredible experience and I learned a lot. But to be the writer and one of the producers and also the lead, it's a lot. But fantastic team. Glenn was amazing. Everyone was really supportive. I mean, we had Alicia Witt, Jamie Lynn Sigler from The Sopranos there in the film as well. And to work with those people and just to... That was my day job for like 2 months. It was incredible.
Right.
You know? It was amazing.
And if you're a fan of Maurice Compte in No Breaking Bad and Southland, he plays the love interest in the film, and also just a magnificent performance, I think.
And it's beautifully shot. I mean, that's the thing that really got me. Again, from the very, very beginning, I was like, this is going to be a good film because it's just so, so beautiful.
Well, we have to thank David Maurice Gill, our cinematographer, for giving such a wonderful look to the film. Mm-hmm. And he and I sat down in advance, and we talked about everything that we dislike in independent film. And we made a list, like, we don't want to roll camera on this, 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 and this. And we stuck to it the entire way. And so we never wanted to roll on something that we didn't feel strongly about.
Now, had you not been the lead in this film, would you have thought about casting a straight actor to play this role?
You know, that's interesting. I mean, in the casting, we saw straight, gay, and it had to always go to the best actor. So for me, the film comes first. And we have a lot of people in the film from the LGBT community, from the music to acting to everything, which is great. But I think, Glenn, if you want to say something about that, I mean, for me, the film comes first.
Well, I think David said it. He was the best actor for the role.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Did I just do that?
His cold read was amazing. So in terms of actors in Hollywood being out in Hollywood, how do you think the climate is for out actors right now?
You know, I get asked this a lot, and I think that if you're established and you have a fan base and a proven track record, I think it's really easy. But I do still believe that it can be very difficult if you're up and coming or if you don't have a career yet and you're out. I think that you can get very pigeonholed, which is unfortunate. when a straight actor plays a gay role, they're celebrated. And it's like, wow, what a stretch. When a, you know, a gay guy can very rarely get a straight role, but mm-hmm. it's a human being just living under different circumstances and conditions. I mean, who you go to bed with and love at night, it shouldn't affect you as an actor and the work that you can bring. So I'm really excited at the changes that have happened very recently. On some level, I think that as an actor, you want to kind of keep your personal life personal so it doesn't affect when people view your work. But at the same time, there's too much going on with the kids, you know, committing suicide because of all this stuff that's going on in the press. So I think that more visibility will really help everybody.
What was the reason that made you come out?
I decided that I was making a movie about marriage equality, and why would I be in the closet? I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was very nerve-wracking. And you probably know I was in a boy band in my late teens. And
Bad Boys Inc. Google it.
I always say it's like in sync with bad teeth and terrible pop songs.
Yeah. How did you get involved in this boy band?
Oh, I was plucked from obscurity. I literally went in for an audition. Somebody saw a picture on the wall. My agent called me and said, this guy wants to see you. I danced a bit, sang a bit. And the next thing, within a month, I'd signed a record deal with A&M. And within 2 months, was on Top of the Pops, every magazine, posters, and crazy, crazy stuff. And as quick as it was up, it was down.
Wow. Well, that is the life of a boy band member, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Unless you're Ricky Martin.
Right.
You need a big hit at the Grammys, baby. That's what you need.
That'd be good. I'll wear some tight leather pants. Okay.
Shoot, style that out. So, Glenn, for you, the last big film you did was Leave It on the Floor. How was it going from a huge musical to something so intimate?
I wasn't the director on Leave It on the Floor. I was the writer-producer on that.
My bad.
But no bad. Still, I was on set the whole time. And it was a complete 180. You know, Leave It on the Floor had so many elements to it, and it's big and it's brash, and this is a very intimate film I do. And it was great for me because I'd never directed a drama before. I've usually done comedy or some type of comedic element, or I had a background in documentary before that. And this was really refreshing to actually shoot something where you didn't just have to make it all poppy colors and explode on the screen and really concentrate on what the characters are doing and feeling. And that was great. And then, you know, to have Jamie Lynn Sigler and Alicia Witt, two actors who I've really admired throughout their careers, acting opposite David was a dream come true because all of us learned so much from them. Like at the end of every day, I'd hug Jamie Lynn and say, you know how much time you saved us today because you know what you're doing?
There are a couple moments with both of them that, I mean, I would love to know what it was like to actually direct them and how much work did you have to do to actually get them to deliver what they delivered? And either one of you can answer that.
Go, David.
Well, I was going to say, you know, for me, it was very emotional, a couple of the scenes that we did. And I was also emotional because I have a real sense of why we wanted to make this film and who we're making the film for. Statistically, there is at least 40,000 binational couples in this country, many living outside of the country, as Glenn was saying earlier. And of those 40,000 plus that we know of, about 40% have children. So, you know, when I'm doing these scenes with Jessica, who's our gorgeous 7-year-old in the movie, she did Paranormal Activity 3, which is amazing.
I was going to find a way to bring that.
And to be doing scenes with her and knowing that what we were filming happens every day to real families. I really had to keep my stuff together. And Glenn would come in and be like, you got to calm down. We're going to be shooting this for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, we were on a very tight schedule. And so we're shooting a happy scene, then a hugely emotional scene. And he's in almost every scene in the film. And so it was a total roller coaster for David. It was really fun for the extras. You know, one day we were shooting in a hospital, and I won't tell you why. You'll have to see the movie. But he was getting prepared for the scene, and so he's crying his eyes out, and he's breathing heavily, and, you know, he's doing everything he needs to do to prepare. The extras had no idea, and they kept on turning, like, is he okay? You know, they had no idea what the scene was, and they're walking through the shot, and they're thinking, what is this freak doing?
He's walking down the corridors, wailing, like, it's crazy.
That's funny and fabulous.
And Jamie Lynn would always just say, whatever gets you there, honey, whatever gets you there.
I mean, seriously, because it is really about that.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, as you were thinking about who you were making the film for, who did you make the film for?
Originally, I wrote the film because I was in a relationship and the person couldn't get their paperwork and went back to England. And that really upset me. And then I started doing photography because the main character in my film is a photographer. So I decided to buy a camera and start shooting. And I started shooting Prop 8 rallies. And then I would see these families that were going through this issue. And it switched everything in my head to be like, wow, I'm really telling a story that's affecting so many people around the world, not just in America, you know? And that was really the switch when I really felt like I had not just an obligation, but also an opportunity to tell a really personal human story that would really move people and make them think twice about this ridiculous law, which is DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act. But really, those four words or four letters, how they're impacting families right now.
It's really pretty.
And I like to say we made this film for anybody with a pulse and anybody who has a sense of fairness in the world. I like to think of myself as a humanist filmmaker. Like, you know, I don't want to put myself in the same sentence as them, but I'm influenced by, like, James L. Brooks, Cameron Crowe, and you look at Terms of Endearment and you care so much about those characters that when one of them comes down with a life-threatening illness, your heart is torn out. And then by the end of it, you want to do something about people who are stricken with cancer. Right. And in the same sense as this, we want you to care so much about these characters that when something really unfair happens to them, it's a call to arms. And we want you to walk out of the theater moved, but also to think, wow, this is really unfair. This is not how it should be in this country.
Yeah, I felt that about everyone, including your the lesbian friend who does what she does for you. I was like, I want to know more about her and what she, how is she doing? Yeah, it was really amazing. So if people wanted to either follow the movie or get any additional information, where can they go?
They can go to twowordscanchangeeverything.com.
And it's going to be on demand simultaneously as our theatrical release. So you can get it on iTunes, on Amazon, on your cable networks on demand. But in addition, we've been thrilled to have theatrical release in New York, L.A., Chicago, Fort Lauderdale, Tucson, Juneau, Alaska. Yeah, come on out, Juneau, and on. So, you know, if you go to our Facebook page or our Twitter, I do the movie at both, or twowordscanchangeeverything.com, you can find out all about it.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming in and spending time with us.
We're just really grateful that this film has created such a discussion. And if we can enlighten people about the fact that even if gay marriage is legal in a state that does not grant somebody immigration status, I think we've opened people's eyes, and that's just the best thing.
Thanks to our guests, Glenn Gaylord, director, and David W. Ross, the writer and star of I Do. And I'm Vash Bodhi.
You don't question love. You set it free, let it grow to something everyone can see. And if you look into your eyes, you will see your love in mine, and you will bless it. And you will bless it. And you will bless it. No, you don't question love.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Pamela Brooks, Michael Allen, and Vash Bodhi contributed program material. Double Duty production thanks to Steve Pride. Tom Goss sang You Don't Question Love, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by the Ivana Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and by listener support. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org for more information about us. You'll also find our news wrap text archives and links to our podcast, blog, and Facebook fan page. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 6RTR, Perth, West Australia, Grateful Dread Radio, Baltimore, Maryland, KRCL, Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!